Hello, welcome back. We are now at episode 39 of the series The Gita Decoded. We are now looking at the text and the meaning of chapter 10 of the Bhagavad Gita, which is the Yoga of Manifestation. We're about halfway through this chapter. Sister Denise has been kind enough to share her understanding and experience of what this chapter means, not just in theory, but as well as reality. Sister Denise, thank you so much.
Thank you
for being here. It's great to have you, as always. I'd like to go through verse 11 with you, and I'd like you to tell us what is your understanding of it. Out of compassion for them, I who dwell within their own beings destroy the darkness born of ignorance with the shining lamp of knowledge. Sister Denise, verse 11 reads with verse 15.
Here again you have one of these heart stanzas. Mm. And, you know, the location of God is one thing. And you know how you say, well, God is in my heart. Doesn't mean that he's literally in my heart. But God is definitely aware that he is deeply loved by the devotee. And so therefore there is compassion. And that is that he will fill them with awareness in spite of their ignorance. And so, you know, one thing is God has a relationship with those who really want to understand. So he relates with their intellect and everything. And then the other is to fulfill the relationship. And there is a law of spirituality connected with the responsibility to fulfill the implication of relationship. So when somebody loves God, he is bound to give the return of that, but that will not necessarily enable a person to understand. Yet he still says, I am giving them understanding of me with the shining lamp of knowledge. So he is actually enabling them to understand something that maybe they're not capable of understanding, which is a really beautiful thing.
The next few stanzas, the next few verses, Arjuna asks God to describe himself, and a very detailed answer is given from verse 19 up until verse 41. And the last two stanzas at verse 40 and 41 read, there is no end to my divine manifestations, Arjuna. This has been declared by me as an example of the extent of my manifestations. Whatever manifested being that is, glorious and vigorous indeed, understand that in every case, he originates from a fraction of my splendor. Oh, sorry, Sister Denise, I just want to read 42 to you as well. But what is this extensive knowledge to you, Arjuna? I support this entire universe constantly with a single fraction of myself.
The important element of this description is encapsulated in the word be'ant. And it is said for God that even if you would take all the trees and turn them into pens, all the oceans and turn them into ink, and the earth, turn it into paper, take the intellect of Goddess Saraswati, you could not complete the praise of God. So praise of God means description of God. And the way that he is describing himself refers to the idea of the qualities of God being invested in everything. There's another quite interesting description that we do have, and that is, if you want to understand the Creator, look at the creation. Oh, there are songs, you know, the prayers and songs, that if you see how beautiful the creation is, how much more beautiful the Creator must be. So in this description, he's describing the world and saying basically that whatever is of interest, that is splendid, that is significant, that is important, it is so because there's a quality of good within that. So usually people would interpret it that God himself has become all of those things, but I don't think it's really like that. I think it's more that all the things that are there in the world, the people, the creations of the people, everything is ultimately in its originality inspired by God, love for God, the wonder of God, and the different qualities of God being reflected in all of those things. So because God is incorporeal, God cannot be known directly. And if he cannot be known directly, then he has to be known metaphorically. Just as when the poets describe a beautiful person, they will say, you know, the hair is like the rivers and the back is like the mountains, and like this, they will compare. And I think that here we have God, the poet, describing himself in such a way that the person who's listening is able to get an idea that God is the most splendid, the most wondrous, the most extraordinary, but it has to be compared with physical things because the human consciousness is not able to apprehend God directly. But you'll see in subsequent chapters that Arjuna really wants to have a direct encounter, a direct experience. So in this chapter, God is saying, well, I'm like this and I'm like that and I'm like the other. And Arjuna is not satisfied. He wants to have direct. I want to see you exactly as you are. I don't want a comparison. So the comparison is very beautiful and it carries us forward. It certainly carries Arjuna forward, but it awakens in him a hunger to know God more directly.
Yes, so Denise, amongst the descriptive words that God uses to describe himself, I found that which is contained in verse 34 very interesting. I am all destroying death and the origin of those things that are yet to be. Among the feminine qualities, I am fame, prosperity, speech, memory, wisdom, courage, and patience. Now, when I read that, I had not hitherto thought of fame and courage as being feminine qualities, and yet that's how it's stated there. I was struck by that. How does that sit with you?
Well, I think it's very beautiful to call fame, prosperity, speech, memory, wisdom, courage, and patience feminine. And I also think it's quite important because we live in such a patriarchal society and God is such a he with a large H, you know. And here to see the feminine side of God, I think is very important, very beautiful. And it's interesting that it's connected with birth and death because the woman is the instrument of birth. And, you know, usually people prefer to die before their wife because it's lonely without. Very often the woman will outlive her husband, very often. And so I think it's just very interesting, the all-destroying death, which is such a total thing, and then you move right into these very gentle, beautiful qualities of the feminine and the origin of what is yet to be. So it's a very lovely stanza, very lovely.
It is. I also liked particularly what was contained in chapter 10's verse 33 of the letters, I am the letter A, and the dual of the compound words. I alone am infinite time. I am the establisher facing in all directions. And in brackets, it's written omniscient. We did establish in the previous chapters that God is not omnipresent, but would you say that the Bhagavad Gita is authority for the fact that God is omniscient and omnipotent?
I would say definitely yes. And the whole thing of referring to the beginning, and the beginning meaning the establisher. One thing that I'm picking up in all of these stanzas indirectly is the description of the Trimurti, the Brahma, Vishnu, Shankar.
What do you take us through those terminologies?
Well, Brahma is the creator, Vishnu the sustainer, Shankar the destroyer. And here you have him talking about being the beginning, the origin. The Trimurti, the way that we understand the Trimurti in Raja Yoga of Brahma Kumaris is that Shiva gets the establishment of the new world done through the instrument of Brahma. So this is the indirect action of God, because he has to do it indirectly because he doesn't do anything. So indirect action. And then instead of doing, being, I am the A. I am, you know, infinite time. I am the establisher. I see, I know everything. You see, and what happens, there's a kind of a law, right? A spiritual law, which says, jesi drishti versus srishti. As is your vision, so is the world. It is also said for God that he had an idea to create the world, and it happened through a thought, you see. And so he just has to be aware of what he is, and it is manifested, you see. But this is quite difficult for people to understand. This is why the Gita is so fascinating for people, because it lends itself to many different angles of interpretation, but it's quite hard for anybody to say hard and fast, this is it, you see. And God is approachable from many, many angles, and it's very difficult to pinpoint. You know, God is not finite. Even God is said to be indefinable. But here you have God describing himself in a lot of metaphorical ways. So what is real, what is poetic, what is metaphorical, what is symbolic, there is left to the devotee to contemplate upon the wonder of God in their own way. So it becomes a very personal relationship with God.
Sister Denise, in the last half of this episode, I would like to do a quick synopsis. The Yoga of Manifestation, what would you say is the main message that is contained in Chapter 10 for Arjuna and therefore for all of us?
Well, the nature of God is unmanifest, but he manifests himself. And his manifestation, he describes himself, I am, you know, this sort of secret ingredient that is hidden in everything in the world that is of value and importance. And it's quite a mysterious way in to God, but yet he says, this is the way in. Again, I would say the creation reflects the identity of the creator, because you know, when you make something, the sign of you is in that thing, and through that you can know who made it. So I think that it's just a very good way for the person who cannot move on to the same level of as God to actually be able to find traces of God in the world, not actual God. God doesn't split himself into lots of little traces, but signs of God, you see. indicators, which help the mind, which is an associative instrument. The mind will conjure up these descriptions, they're very visual descriptions, and they will help the mind to go to the unmanifest through these poetic descriptions and analogies. Mm. So I think it's really about that.
Yeah. Sister Denise, I see in Arjuna, from previous chapters, that God revealed bits and pieces of himself to Arjuna, and all that did was create in Arjuna a hunger for more. And I use the word hunger because one gets the impression that Arjuna cannot get enough of God. He wants more and more and more. What is the nature of the special relationship that exists between these two souls? Arjuna is God's chosen one, is he not? Why? And again, who chose who?
It's symbiotic, isn't it?
Symbiosis, okay. But could you describe the relationship between the two of them that results in revelation to Arjuna in this chapter and the next one?
Well, if we go back to the situation which brought Arjuna and Krishna together in the chariot, it's because Arjuna said, "I want you." And Krishna said, either you can have me or you can have my powers. So Duryodhana chose the powers and Arjuna chose him.
Is that love, Denise? I choose you?
Well, this is love. I choose you.
Okay, I like that. Love means I choose you. So whoever you choose. Another thing that strikes me is that Arjuna and God give each other their time. Love means giving someone your time.
Yes.
Yes, but okay, I interrupted you in your answer.
If you love someone, you can see them. Somebody who feels that there's somebody who can see me, somebody who knows me, you'll show more. And for Arjuna, who sees more, he says, I want more. You see, because God is very secret, very hidden, being incorporeal, but he's showing something which is also like a temptation. And Arjuna says, oh, if this is there, then what else is there? What else is there? And so they're coming to each other in such a way that their relationship is getting amplified. The more they know about each other, the more they want more. And this is really the beauty of how a relationship flourishes and flowers and blossoms.
There is a beauty about that, isn't there? Because it's not an ordinary thing to have an intimate relationship with God.
And you see, Arjuna is, out of all people, you know, the one who connects with God. Everybody else is via somebody else. But here you have Arjuna and God together inside the same chariot, which is a very intimate space. And of course, chariot refers to the body. So the soul of Arjuna, the soul of God, talking to each other inside the head of the man Arjuna. It's very extraordinary, you see. Very, very close. There's no distance between them. So they can reveal to each other. And Arjuna doesn't hold anything back about his feelings. He's not in any kind of formal relationship. And we see later in the Gita, when God has revealed his terrifying form, that Arjuna apologizes because, you know, he's seeing Krishna in his friendly, attractive form, so he doesn't strike the pose of the person who is venerating God, but they're just friends. And then when he sees the very powerful form, then he feels that his behavior was inappropriate. But without that intimacy, there couldn't be this poetic experience.
Mm. Yes, Denise, chapter 10 is verse after verse after verse of the many qualities of God, the various aspects of God, His personality traits, who He is. It's written metaphorically. The reason that God is all of these things, my understanding of it is that the reason that He is all of these things is because He has to be that way to meet the needs of His children. Yeah. Is there more to it than that? You see, someone can't be all of this for no reason, because the universe doesn't make mistakes. Everything that exists is all part of a pattern. So God is all of this for what reason? What is your take on it?
Well, I don't necessarily really see that it's for a reason other than a poetic reason, because I don't think God will take these forms in order to satisfy someone, but rather He describes Himself in these ways, giving access to Himself rather than satisfying people. I see it more as giving access, you see, because a person will appreciate something in the world, the wonder of it, and that becomes an access way, a pathway to God, you see, through that metaphor. So satisfying people is satisfying their needs, their wants. So that's one area which God does satisfy. But I think here we're talking about inroads, ways in, because God is so, you know, indefinable, inaccessible. And He's saying, look, you can come to Me through this. You can come to Me through that. Mm. It'll be okay. I make Myself accessible to you. Mm. Through the wonder of the creation, which contains these little traces, like the little pathways on a flower that show a bee the way into the pollen, you know.
Mm. And Sister Denise, last aspect. I see that in chapter 10, God uses words to describe Himself to Arjuna. So this is still a conversation. There's no visuals to this. And the impact is that all it does is create for Arjuna a greater hunger.
It does. It does.
Okay, so at this point it's just words. It's still words between them.
Yes.
Okay, so it's interesting that up until this point it's just conversation. Okay,
yeah.
And in forthcoming episodes, it becomes more
level.
Than conversation.
Different level.
Okay,
altogether.
So their relationship is escalating?
It is escalating.
Okay. The atmosphere in the studio is also escalating, and I must admit I'm quite excited to see all of you back for the next chapter, chapter 11. I'd like to thank Sister Denise for her very refreshing point of view on this ancient scripture. Like you, I'm sure you are seeing aspects of the Bhagavad Gita that you've never seen before and hearing and understanding it in an entirely different way as well. If this has been your experience, then it means our purpose here has been fulfilled, because we want for people to understand what God's message is to His children, for His children. So thank you so much for joining us, and we do hope to see you soon for the next episode, which will be chapter 11 in the series, The Gita Decoded. Thank you so much for joining us, and Sister Denise, many blessings from the heart to you too. Thank you, and goodbye.